Push Your Peak Series 2 is here, a Watch Bike podcast presented by me, Louise Minchin, former BBC Breakfast presenter, who took up sport late in life and is a passionate endurance athlete. Each week, I'll be joined by some of the world's most talented sportswomen and men who've achieved extraordinary things. I'll be finding out what it takes, both physically and mentally, to surpass what you think you're capable of to achieve your goals. Tune in to hear these truly inspiring stories and take away the belief that you can achieve your own goals, no matter how big or small. Like and subscribe to listen to a new episode every Wednesday. Push Your Peak, a podcast for real athletes who don't know their limits. Today, I'm joined by European champion and England Lioness goalkeeper, Mary Earps. This summer, the Lionesses captured the imagination of the entire country when they were crowned European champions, a tournament that will and has already changed the future of women's football. Mary's performance for England will live long in the memory of the tournament, managing to only concede 2 goals and keeping 4 clean sheets. Born and raised in Nottingham, Mary's football career started in 2009 for Leicester City. She then has spent time at various Super League clubs before joining Manchester United in 2019. She's making a huge impact on the future of women's football. Her determination, outrageous skill, and infectious personality is inspiring to everyone around her. And it's an honour to welcome Mary to the podcast. Mary, it is such a joy to speak to you, and massive. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity, but I know loads of people have, to sort of offer you and the team huge congratulations for what you did in the summer. That was an extraordinary experience for all of us watching you. What was it like being part of that?
Thank you. Wow, that was some introduction. I hope I can follow that in a good way. Yeah, obviously it was incredible to be part of the team this summer. A summer I'll never forget for sure. And yeah, it's still a bit of a dream, to be honest, trying to adjust back to normal life and just, yeah, get back to the day job, I suppose, because it was such a high. And yeah, we loved every minute.
I mean, it was, you know, it's a sort of, I felt this sort of wave, and you must have felt it too from where you were on the pitch, this wave of emotion and of excitement. And, you know, for you to go and win, it was just, it brought a huge uplift, actually, to the whole nation, but I think particularly, and I've got 2 young daughters, 2 young women out there, to see you smashing it as role models.
I hope so. I think that's something that myself and the whole team, the whole group, we feel really strongly about in terms of wanting to leave a legacy. People keep saying, you know, is this a marker in time? Has this changed anything? You know, is this going to be a turning point? And I feel like obviously these are fantastic cliches, but I think that the reality of it is hopefully we'll be able to really see that effect in the coming years and be able to look back and all these initiatives and conversations that we're trying to have, obviously, with the Prime Minister and the government, and trying to make sure that we really promote and make it possible for girls to have access to football and young women to be able to play football and have equal opportunity. This is something that we feel really strongly about as a group. So that's something that we're really trying to make change on, and hopefully we can use our voices and our channels at the moment with people maybe listening to do that.
Do you feel that there are doors that were ajar that perhaps weren't before that you can open now?
I think we've definitely got people's ear a little bit more than what we used to, which is obviously a fantastic feeling. And yeah, and hopefully we can use it for the good of the future and the younger generation and women everywhere, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And this podcast is called Push Your Peak, and there's so much in your career which will be really interesting to hear from our listeners, and to kind of, like, you know, to give them ideas about what to do themselves. And, you know, so much is, I love talking to people on this podcast because it's a space for kind of like an honest reflection in some ways. And we always start, or I seem to always start, by having a little bit of background, because here you are a, you know, champion winner, and football back in the day, and even, you know, wasn't necessarily something that, you know, was really easy to do as a girl growing up. So tell us, you were about 8 when you first started playing, were you?
Yeah, I was about 8 when I first started. I feel like it's the old love affair that everybody sort of talks about, the love story, how it all started. But I played in the back garden with my brother and my dad, just joined in one day. And so then went down to, my dad took me down to my brother's training just like a local team, Westbridge for Colts, to see if I enjoyed it, see if it was something that I wanted to pursue. And I absolutely loved it, but I couldn't mix. I think there was definitely rules back then about what age you could play football with boys. I'm not entirely sure what the age was, but I was getting towards the age of 10 by the time I was sort of like, well, I can't play games with my brother or with the boys. I was a little bit older than him, but I knew that I loved football and I wanted to play. So then when I started going to school, one of the dads of one of the girls that I went to school with, he set up a local team, Westbridge for Colts, you know. So then that was like the first female Westbridge for Colts team, like just under 10. So, and that's kind of where it all started, really.
So that was a bit of sort of inspiration from him, actually, I suppose, was it?
Yeah, I think it's strange. Without that, there was no team. So if he hadn't have set it up, yeah, there was a few people, I think, along the way throughout my childhood and I guess my growing up years where somebody had to do something out of the blue that hadn't been done before, I suppose.
Which is really lovely, actually, because it takes people like that to sort of help you on your journey, doesn't it?
Definitely. Definitely, for sure.
So when you first started playing, was it always goal that you wanted to be in?
Yeah, pretty much from the get-go. So started out in this team. It was under 10s, and so I don't know, I would have been, what, 9 at the time or whatever it was. And then just running around like headless chicken, just running around in the summer, like just loving football, playing football. And then, yeah, first game comes around and there's a penalty. Like, so we're taking our turns in goal kind of thing. It was my turn to go in goal for whatever reason. I don't know if we were taking a game each or if we're taking 20 minutes. It's quite common, like, for everyone to rotate in when there's not a goalkeeper. And then saved the penalty. And that was it. I just loved it ever since. So like prior to that point in the game, my dad was by the goal and I was just saying, I'm so bored. Like, come on, dad. Like, can I go up front yet or whatever? My dad was like, just concentrate. I'm like doing cartwheels, like trying to entertain myself. And then, yeah, save that penalty. And that was it. I just loved the feeling of making a save, diving around in the mud, helping the team. Like, that was me sold. So, yeah, that point on, I trained as a goalkeeper.
You make me nervous even listening to you talk about it, because there is a unique pressure, isn't there, from being a goalkeeper, I think. I mean, I watch you and I just think, whoa, because you can, you're a make or break, aren't you?
Yeah, I definitely think, I mean, my personal opinion is that the goalkeeping position is the hardest position on the pitch. I think it's a very complicated position. I think you've got a split second to like a nanosecond to make a decision. And there's so many different factors that play into different decisions, not just, you know, like, you know, how you've distributed your weight between your toes and, you know, what position your hands are in and, you know, what your footwork's going to be like. And then you're judging the ball coming in at a certain pace or timing. And then you've got to think about, you know, how slick the grass is. Is it going to hold up? Is it going to fire through? What's the weather doing? How has the player hit the ball? And all these things just add up to like a split second decision that obviously everybody loves to criticize when you get wrong. But ultimately, it's so complicated and there's so many factors. It is a hugely pressurized position, but it's one that I love and I wouldn't change at all. So
I love the way you say that with a smile, because I really think it takes a particular type of bravery, actually. And all those decisions, because you can train, and we'll come to training and I want to know a lot about that a little bit later, specifically, you know, to do with what bike as well. But you can do as much as you like in training. But all that you've said is it's a brain thing, isn't it? It's something, you know, all that information. I know our brains are super clever, but you've got to process that information without even a second to think about it.
Yeah, a lot of it definitely is in the brain. I think that's the same in pretty much any sport, to be honest. Obviously, you train physically to have the muscle memory to be able to perform certain skills. But I think ultimately, a lot of high-level sport comes down to decision-making. It comes down to composure and the ability to have like a certain mentality and be able to transfer what you've learned from training onto the pitch at the highest level, at the highest pressure, and be able to perform that under pressure. So
okay, let's talk about, and I'm kind of forward winding here, and I'll come back to you know your journey along from being that 8-year-old and first time you played in goal. Obviously the pressure in games like the Euros is different, and a game for your club as well. Do you approach each game in the same way? Are there certain kind of tricks that you've got or things that you help yourself with?
I feel like I try and take every game as it comes and respect it in its own entity, purely on the basis that I like to try and go in with the visualization of like every game's like a blank canvas. Of course, you can like prepare for what you think the opposition is going to pose and the threats, and you can do some specific work towards what their strengths are. But ultimately, when normally you'll prepare in a certain way and the game will go the complete opposite way. So you think, oh, well, they're going to throw a lot of crosses in, and then suddenly there's loads of shots from distance, or you think that there's going to be lots of shots from the edge of the area, and it actually becomes a like 1v1s, they're pushing the ball through. So usually what you anticipate, the opposition will always throw in a curveball and do something unpredictable, because that's what great teams do. So I try and take every game as much as I can in its own right and without preconceived ideas of what I think that will look like, but with all the preparation in the bank. So yeah, that's kind of, I kind of take my objectives, objectives into the game, and then just go from there, really. But it's normally just focused around me trying to do my job to the best of my ability and in order to help the team win.
Do you ever watch stuff back?
Yes, every game.
Do you? Right. And yeah. What do you learn from it about yourself?
So I'll watch training back on occasion sometimes as well, when things have gone maybe not as well and I need to like understand what's going on wrong and why, or when things have gone particularly well, then I'll also watch it back as well to go, okay, why is this going well? What do I need to continue to keep doing? But then when it comes to games, I think it's important to review everyone, and I get my games clipped. So every time I touch the ball or there's some sort of interaction between myself and the play, then I'll get a certain amount of clips per game, and that'll be put into like a video. And then I'll review that with my goalkeeper coach. And, we talk about everything then, from my positioning, to the passes that I've been playing, or my body shape, or a particular save or a technique that I've gone with, or everything really. We just try and always find those 1% improvements, because I think you can, I mean, there's things that I'm constantly learning, constantly trying to improve and tweak. So yeah, for me, having video footage, like objective footage, because obviously subjective experience is really important, and your personal account of what you thought happened, and that will often shape your decision, that shapes your decision making. So then when you see that back, you might see it from a slightly different perspective and realize, oh, I actually had more time than I thought there, or no, that was just what I had to do in that moment, or you know, if I did that again, would I do it differently? And so yeah, you can talk about it in a way, and it just helps facilitate learning, I think.
I think that's honestly one of the most insightful things I've heard people tell me on this podcast, actually. Would I do it differently? And also learning, looking at the good and the bad, because you can learn from both of them, actually, can't you? And it's always, you know, I suppose it's easier. I don't know, what is it? I mean, I think a lot of us are pretty self-critical, actually. And to that point you said about, actually, that was the only option I had at the time. Sometimes maybe that's a good learning.
Yeah, I think I'm very self-critical. There's lots of times where I sit with my goalkeeper coach and I'll be like, oh, maybe I could have done this. And he'll be like, it worked out well. I don't know what you're trying to find a problem there. But I think it's because I'm always wanting to demand that little bit more of myself. If I can demand like that little bit extra composure or a better touch or a better body position, maybe I could have had a better outcome. But sometimes the reality of it is, yeah, you had to deal with what you got, and you had to make the best of a situation which was quite tough. So you need that balance, and without that objective footage, without like, it's almost like, you know, like quantitative data to say that is what it was, then you're just going off your own personal biases as opposed to like fact, I suppose.
I think I'm trying to think of people in other places. I mean, there will be places, you know, there will be obviously sports people who can definitely look at the performances and the way they've done things. Perhaps they're not, that's so interesting to be. And I used to, when I first started out in broadcasting and I was in TV, I used to watch things back because I was like, if I'm going to be irritated by it, then I mean, goodness me, poor audience. So I think but it does take a certain amount of, you know, I find that a very painful process. Do you find it painful?
Sometimes it's not enjoyable to watch yourself do something that you wish you could do differently.
Change.
Like absolutely. Sometimes it's not nice, especially when you've done something which you know immediately, like, I really wish I'd not, or you make an error of some kind like that. That is not enjoyable to watch, but it's, you know, and especially if you let it get to you, it can, you know, when you think about thousands, millions of people that watch the game as well, and you think, right, I've just made a right boob of myself, shall we say, in front of hundreds of thousands of people. But you have to take the good with the bad, and we're all human at the end of the day. I know that sometimes people on social media like to portray this pretty perfect life, and people who definitely criticize you, it's as if that they're perfect themselves. But the reality of the situation is I'm just a person trying to give her absolute all, and I'm never going to get it right 100% of the time. I'm doing my absolute best to be perfect 100% of the time, but perfection isn't real. It's not attainable. But I just believe in striving for excellence and knowing that I can be proud of what I've achieved and knowing that I've given it my best. And that's kind of how I see it, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, your record, you know, look at what you've done. European champions, you conceded 2 goals in the entire tournament, 4 clean sheets. You know, this is, you are someone not to be messed with, by the way. So.
This podcast is brought to you by Wattbike. Push your performance this year with Wattbike. Whether you're training for a sportive or simply want to get fitter, the award-winning smart bike Wattbike Atom could be your perfect training partner. With integrated gear shifters, real ride feel and gold standard accuracy, this is the ultimate indoor bike to kickstart your indoor training. You can measure and track your cycling performance on the free Wattbike Hub app and get real-time feedback on your pedaling technique too. Expertly crafted and designed in the UK, Wattbikes are tough enough to withstand elite athletes in training while beautiful enough to sit in your own home. Discover how Wattbike can help you reach your goals this year. Just head to wattbike.com.
Let's go back a little bit to, so you started playing it in goal, and then when you, it took a while. I mean, you know, things have changed quite a lot, but quite a while. But when did you want to turn professional, and was that easy?
I'd say the turn to pro was 2016 after I graduated from university. I think as a kid, I always dreamed that I would represent my country and represent my country at major tournaments and win trophies. That's always something that I dreamed of, you know, you fantasize as a kid, but I never really thought it'd be a reality, in the sense that professional day-to-day football was never something that was a dream, because it was never realistic. It was never, it was never visible. So I think from that point of view, really, I only went pro in 2016. And to me, the definition of professional is that you get to do it as your day job and it pays your bills and whatever. But the professional footballer of Maryups at 2016, I mean, the professional footballer of Maryups now in 2022, but also the professional footballer that's what everybody views as a professional footballer, and earning this, you know, lavish lifestyle and all that type of thing. It's a very different reality as a female professional footballer. So obviously I started playing in the Super League when I was 17. I think I was the youngest goalkeeper at the time. I'm not sure if there's been a younger goalkeeper since then, but like, and the league was classed as professional, but realistically it was semi-professional. Like, I was still in school. I still worked different jobs in order to be able to afford to travel and pay for my equipment and all the things that I needed. And I think I earned like, I don't know, like £25 a game or something at that point, which as great as it is to have said, yeah, I'm a professional, it's not professional, you know? Mm. And I think then there's that disparity between what people think professional footballer is and the reality of being a female footballer. Like, it's very, very, very different. Even 18 months ago, you know, there was a situation where my deductions, like my mortgage, my rent was more than what was coming in. So like, life as a female footballer is just, yeah, it's super different. And I feel like it's ever changing, to be honest. I think what I'm trying to, I guess I am a professional footballer. It's my job, it's my livelihood, and I love it. But I think it's not as like glamorous maybe as it sounds. And I'm really careful when I speak about it, because I don't want young women and young girls to get the impression that become a professional footballer and life is super fixed. And I think that they need to be conscious of making sure that they have their education and absolutely go out there and achieve your dreams, but also make sure that you're making smart decisions to make sure you have a sustainable career. And I'm not sure if that answered your question, but yes, I'm a professional footballer. It happened in 2016 after I graduated. And I'm still riding that wave. So
I think it was a better answer than my question. if that's any consolation. I think it was a really, because I think there's a lot of, you know, like you say, there'll be young girls out there who are assuming that they, you know, that you're right, that the life that you have is the life that somebody else, perhaps a man playing for the same club as you, it's very different. And, you know, you know, what you've just said to me has, you know, has really kind of opened my eyes to that. I mean, I can imagine, but, you know, that it's a vast difference. And, you know, what you're doing to warn young girls that, you know, it's kind of like, it's not all rose tinted glasses, is it, actually? And that's a good point to make, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm just careful about like wanting to portray it as like, yeah, I'm a professional footballer and like, I love what I do. And I know that it's a fantastic job, but I think it's just a really fine line between, having rose tinted glasses on and suggesting that everything is, yeah, rosy, when actually a journey to be a professional female footballer is very, very complicated. Life looks very different post Euros than what it does pre Euros. There's it's constantly changing. And you're constantly making different decisions. And yeah, I love what I do. And I'm fortunate to have this opportunity because, you know, there's many women who came before me who didn't. And there's many women after me who are going to have even better opportunities because of the work that we're doing now, just as I've got a fantastic opportunity now for the women who went before me. And I think that that's important to recognise. So
I think that's really important. In anything that, you know, we all do outside our lives is it's about helping, you know, putting your hand down and helping the people who are coming up behind you as well. And I think that's a really, really good message. Tell us a little bit about life at Man United, for example. I mean, what's that? You know, it's an extraordinarily worldwide, massive club. What's that like?
Yeah, it's a huge, huge football club with a rich, rich football in history. And it's also, I mean, one of the biggest footballing brands in the world. It's crazy, definitely crazy. There's a lot of things that came with it that I didn't expect. Hard to even name some things. I think as a Manchester United player, you're always under the microscope, definitely. Like, you can see that with how football's been over the last few years, with how things have gone at different times. And there's definitely a tougher microscope. The fans, you know, have really high expectations, and obviously it's a huge football club which has a rich history of success, and so we definitely want to be able to follow that. And especially as a newly formed, I mean, I hate saying that, to be honest, because it's not really newly formed, and you know, Manchester United is a huge club, so it definitely should have a women's football team. It's crazy that it didn't before. Probably get in trouble for saying that, but never mind. And you know, I think the club in general, it deserves greatness. The fans deserve greatness. So, you know, I hope that we can really win some trophies and really do some great things over the coming seasons, like in the not so distant future, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask you, actually. What are the goals for the next season?
Yeah, I think goals is a funny one. We haven't actually laid out like any massive team objectives because I feel like they're kind of unspoken. I feel like we've been chasing Champions League for quite a long time, and for me, this is the year that hopefully that actually becomes a reality. I think the club and the squad now is in the best position it's been in. I think the squad's been very light and lack depth for a couple of years, which has always made it really difficult because the season is long and it's tough. And you know, you need a big squad in order to really, really be able to challenge for these major trophies and Champions League qualification spots. But hopefully this year, that's definitely what we're all trying to achieve, no doubt. So ask me in a year where we're at, and hopefully I'll be happy.
Well, I'd love to. Tell me, Mary, as well, because I read, and I'm really intrigued by this, because I'm sure lots of people listening have been through moments like this in their life. I understand that you'd actually made peace at some point with actually, you know, your international career being over. You may not have gone on to play any more international games. And, you know, I've certainly had an experience like that in my life when there was something I really wanted to do. And I thought, actually, do you know what? It's just never going to happen for me. And I got to a position where I was like, okay, I'm okay with that. And there'll be lots of people who may have that in jobs or in their personal life. So had you genuinely kind of thought, okay, I can live without that. It's going to be, that is my story.
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously there were a few things that happened a couple of years ago, kind of really out of the blue in terms of, not being picked for my country. And it sort of after being picked for pretty much my my entire footballing year. And it came very out of the blue and as a surprise and without too much reasoning. I was just sort of, out in the cold and with not much dialogue ever, like, you know, since that point. So, you know, it really knocked me for six or 12 or 18 or whatever other multiple of six that you can think of. Like, it really did knock me back and took all my confidence. So I had to do a lot of work on myself in the lockdown when COVID happened. I think, to be honest, COVID probably happened at the best time for me personally, because I really had some grief and things to work through, like mourning like a death, kind of. That's what it felt like.
These were your hopes and dreams, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it felt like my international career was over. And at first, that was really hard for me to process. And obviously, I didn't really have too much. There wasn't a lot of conversation. So I couldn't really understand. And without that understanding, it's really hard to process and move on. And I had to do a lot of work internally and go away and work on myself. And I got to a point where, I felt like I was, in a good place, you know, a healthy place. You know, I felt like my mental health was back on track, and I've really felt I fought my way back and fought the demons away, and had a conversation with my contract at United was coming to an end, and there was conversations to extend, and I sort of said to my agent, like, I don't know, I'm not sure this, I'm gonna do it, I'm not sure this is the right move for me. And again, that goes back to conversations about being a female professional footballer. You know, I was at that point living paycheck to paycheck, and I'm coming up to the age of 30. I'm thinking, right, if I sign this contract extension, I'm going to be 31 by the time that it ends. I'm going to be in maybe not the best financial position in terms of being able to plan my future. You know, at that point, am I going to want to start a family? Am I really putting myself in, am I doing myself a disservice? You know, I have a business degree. Like, I always said when my time was up, if I gave it my best go, if the brutal and truth and honest reality is that I'm not good enough, there's nothing to be ashamed of. I gave it my absolute best. I fell short. That's okay. But now it's time to face the music, look at myself in the mirror and know that, that you've reached your ceiling. And I always said when I had reached the ceiling, I would be honest enough and humble enough to be able to look at myself in the mirror and know that, and know and try and know when to call time. It's always difficult. So I spoke to my parents, and my parents were like, you know, they were supportive, but they were obviously disappointed because they know how much I love the game. You know, they know how much it meant to me, and they saw how hurt I was with everything that had kind of transpired. And then conversations with United kind of carried on, and in the end it got to a point where I was like, okay, I can, the contract offer that came through was, it meant that I could make ends meet and potentially save some money as well. So I was like, well, my bills are gonna, like, I'm gonna be able to take care of the bills, I'm gonna be able to potentially save and maybe buy another property, which was always something that was on my bucket list. You know, I'd saved from the years prior, from being at Wolfsburg, I'd saved, because I'm a saving squirrel, I always have been. And I was like, well, maybe then I can make it work with the plan over the next couple of years to build build my post career then. So I've got 2 years where I don't have to worry about the bills. I can get my bills paid and be fine, like live and enjoy my life. Like, you know, non-international football meant that I would have like a few extra weekends off through the year, and maybe I'd be able to travel a bit depending on obviously how much I'd saved up. And so I was just kind of like, you know what, I'll go for it, I'll sign the extension, and I'll give it a couple more years of just playing the game that I love, just to enjoy it, and then whilst I've got all this extra free time from not being an international footballer, I will use that to try and build my profile, to figure out what I want to do next, to get some work experience in areas that I feel passionately about, like punditry or in business or in property or whatever. And that was kind of the plan. And then, so I signed that in the January. Obviously then everything else happened, like the Olympics went by and I was like, cool. And then in the September, the season started again. Sweet. Then Serena came in and obviously she invited me back. And she was like,
Legendary coach. Shall we call her that? Because that's turned things around.
Yeah. I said to her the other week, I was like, I described my life as life before Serena and after Serena. And they both look very, very different. And I thought, I think it's sort of similar now to like life before Euros and after Euros look very different. So yeah, it's a very long winded story, but yeah, the long and the short, she's given my career a whole new change. If my life was a book, it was ending. The there was a massive chapter. The whole book was on football and it was coming to an end. And she just gave me a whole new, she gave me a whole new book to write, put it that way. She's
She has. I mean, yeah. I'm just watching you talking about that because, first of all, thank you for being incredibly honest, because, you know, that's a very difficult thing that you had to go through. And all those issues you talk about paying the bills and all the rest of it and having to, you know, kind of work on your psychology, you know, working on having your dreams sort of, it's like having the rug pulled out from under you, isn't it? And, you know, that's very, really, really honest. What's your learning, I suppose? Is it just like hang on, or what would your learning from all that be?
My learnings, I mean, there were a number of things. First of all, the biggest thing I think is that there's always a way out. Like, you can be taken to the darkest depths of hell and there's still a way out. Just keep going. Like, you know, I don't know how. There's no right way, I suppose. There's no like magic spell that kind of makes things right, but there's always a way. And I sort of feel like if I can make it out of what I made it out of, I can make it through anything. Like, I obviously hope that nothing similar ever happens again and that I never feel as low as that, but I know that it's happened before and I can pull myself out and it'll be hard, but you know, I've overcome some, you know, the most difficult time of my whole life. And I feel like, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I think like that was the biggest thing, is that, you know, I'm everybody has so much strength inside them that, you know, you just gotta find it. And sometimes you don't feel like finding it, and it's okay to just need to get through the day, to be honest. It's okay. It's actually so fine. And be in your feelings. I think that was another thing that I really learned. Like, I'm a big compartmentalizer. I really like to be able to find clarity in things. And sometimes I found it really difficult not being able to find clarity, not being able to have understanding. And I just felt like for the first time in my life, I never had any motivation. Like, I literally just felt like it would be like, oh, like, let's get up. Like, let's, you know, and I'd be like, well, why? But why? What's the point? Like, it doesn't, nothing, everything that used to make sense just didn't make sense anymore. And then, I just found myself going like day to day, just like, right, okay, go day to day. And then I was able to, and then so my third learning, I mean, there were so many, but my third thing, I think the real things that were like pivotal for me was gratitude and being able to appreciate small things. Like, one of the big things was like, oh, isn't it great that I can like go to like a local coffee shop, support a local business, because I love doing that, getting nice coffee, enjoy it and have like a little walk. Like, isn't that so nice? Not in the rain in Manchester, but you know, on a nice day. Like, and I just, there was little things like that, or like being able to go to the cinema and watch like a nice film, or I don't know, being able to like have like a FaceTime with my gran, just like these small things that like, that I just found a lot of, I was just like, wow, like, I'm just so grateful. And that was like the big things, that kind of helped me turn things around and, find my way again. So.
Oh, gosh, I think everybody listening to that, honestly, it's making me quite emotional, actually. So thank you, because I think, you know, that's really deeply honest to what you've said. It's very clear you have not just, you know, Serena. We all need more Serenas in our life. We can definitely say that, can't we? You also got a clear support network outside of football, haven't you? Your family.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I think my family, without them driving me to football all those years, I wouldn't be where I am today, no doubt. So.
I'm giving you good advice along the way as well. Okay, so let's talk about training, because you know, what's really clear from listening to this podcast is that you're all in, aren't you? So what's typical training look like? And obviously, What Bike, this podcast is by What Bike. Are you on your bike?
I mean, I cannot wait. I actually love a What Bike. I have like a real love-hate relationship with disgusting spin sessions.
Sweaty, yeah. Hot, yeah. Ouchy.
Sweaty and like, I feel like they're good for your sins, you know, like they're good. Like they take you to like a dark place mentally. And I think I enjoy that. I think I actually did a lot of bike workouts in the lockdown. I really, really loved that. I found like I don't even know what it is. It's like a cycling network on YouTube. And I used to just put my headphones in and pick like, you know, whatever workout I needed to do, whether that was like a 20 minute one or a 45 minute one or a HIIT one or longer intervals, just put my music in, get my headphones on. And grind out a very gritty workout for sure.
I know you're short for time, so let me just ask you one more question. You said one of the things that you said, which I loved, which was being your feelings, okay? And you literally kind of like were the example of all our feelings in that press conference. You know what I'm going to say? You got on that table and you danced.
Yeah, that was definitely me being in my feels for sure. But yeah, I feel like that was just genuine emotion and not very logical. Like, you know, I've gone on about education and academic studies and how important it is to.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you throw it out the window.
Yeah, definitely didn't think that through, because that table was not a table. It was, I don't even know what it was. It wasn't a table. And that's why when you see me go in, first of all, I just bolt straight for Serena, head down, don't look at anything else. And I put my foot over the worktop and I'm looking at it going, is this going to collapse? Don't know.
Don't care.
Oh, I'm going to do it. Stood on it. And that's why Serena's like this, because she thinks I'm going to like fall. And then I look up and I see all these cameras and I think, oh, well, done it now. So yeah, then I just tried to stick with it and roll with it. And I'm just really glad it didn't collapse.
Oh, Mary, you totally styled it out, and you just, you know, you're the hero for so many people, for not just what you did in the tournament, but for just going out there. And do you know what? Taking the joy from it as well.
That was literally, I think, but that was also the thing from where I've been to where I am now. My whole thing was I just wanted to do my job to the best of my ability and try and enjoy and make the most of every minute, because, yeah, I'd been in some times where, you know, joy was hard to come by, and this just felt like, Every minute now just feels like a bonus. It's so strange to explain, because I really thought my career was over. So yeah, it's just been the most incredible year, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. Mary, congratulations. So let me do these quick fires.
Okay.
Okay, so what is your guilty pleasure after a savage What Bike session?
Tough workout, that's a tough call. I do like pizza. To be honest, it depends. I'm a bit of a, it's not really quick fire this, but I like loads of picky bits. So yeah, picky snacks.
Two more questions. What song gets you pumped for a workout?
Oh, depends. I've got a whole playlist. I have a carefully constructed playlist, which gets me right in the zone.
And best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Be yourself. Don't be afraid to be yourself. There's only one ear in the whole world. Be yourself.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Oh, Mary, honestly, you're the hero to my daughters and to me, and you're an absolute legend. And I love that podcast. Thank you very much. Next week, I'll be joined by John McAvoy, the convicted armed robber who turned his life around through the power of sport and is now a record-breaking endurance athlete. This podcast was brought to you by What Bike. The What Bike Atom is the ultimate indoor bike to kickstart your training. No matter what your training or fitness goals are, the free What Bike Hub app can get you there. Check out whatbike.com to push your performance edge.